You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Take me to the water, take me to the sea.
Ahoy, and welcome aboard Caleb's Canoe. We will be sojourning through the dangerous white water rapids of prophecy today. So put on your life vest of righteousness and hold tight to your steering paddle as we wade through the water of the Word of God. Well, we left off last time and we were talking about kind of something that's kind of a little bit humorous. We talked about how names are being changed, and I mentioned the football team, the Washington Redskins. People raised a lot of cane about the name Redskins. They thought it was derogatory, so they have changed it to thus the Washington football team. They're kind of searching for a name. And even the Cleveland Indians are now set to change their name from the Cleveland Indians to the Cleveland Guardians and so forth. But, you know, it's kind of interesting that no one's ever raised any questions about a lot of our colleges and even our professional teams are named after devils. In fact, Duke has the Blue Devils, and Arizona State has the Sun Devil, and Texas A&M International has the Death Devil, and Central Connecticut has Blue Devils. We have, even here in Florida, Florida Agriculture and Military Institute is the Rattlers, and then we have Mississippi Valley Delta Devils, and then New Jersey Devils are a hockey team. Nobody seems to raise any questions about that, but I just thought it was interesting. We're interested in changing names, but some of the names that are really based on Satan, no one has any questions about that or doubts. One of the things that I mentioned about Lucifer, he was the light bearer, okay? Now, the light bearer and his name derived from that, Luciferin, and we see that there was actually a light bearer in mythology, and it was Prometheus. If you remember, Prometheus, he was the one who basically is sort of a devil, almost incarnate. What he did was he stole fire from heaven, and he brought it down, and he brought it to the people. In other words, giving this knowledge, and this is the whole concept I was talking about, of Lucifer being the knowledge bearer and Gnosticism, and how this is infiltrated even into our Christian churches. And there's a story about Prometheus and Io. Prometheus gave fire to the humans, and he goes behind Zeus's back by allowing men to keep the best parts of the animal sacrifice to the gods and letting the gods only have the worst parts of the animals. So as punishment, Zeus chains him to a rock, and every day Prometheus has his liver eaten by an eagle. Okay, one day a beast that looked like a cow and had the voice of a girl came across Prometheus, and she wondered why he was chained to the rock and questioned him as to why he was there. And Prometheus recognized her and saw that she was a princess, Io, but she had been changed by Hera into a cow. So anyway, she's the one that gets involved with him and so forth, and they end up actually freeing Prometheus from his bounds. So one of the things we see in this whole story is it's been picked up by the movie makers. There's a movie called Prometheus. And in Prometheus, we have a group of people are set out to find the origin of man, and they believe they traced it to creators that were on a planet. And they go there, and they find out that what they thought was going to happen didn't happen. And so in this movie, we see the same thing. They're searching for the origin of man, when the origin of man is very simple. In the beginning, God created heaven and the earth, and he created man in his own image. In fact, if you go to New York right today and you go to Rockefeller Center, you can see Prometheus, the light giver, as a gold statue in the middle of a Rockefeller Center as a centerpiece. So one of the things I want to mention is there's a lot of things that people talk about in terms of snakes that are derogatory. And, you know, it's funny because all these characteristics seem to have scriptural relations to them. And one of them is what Native Americans used to say about the settlers. They said, I understand why my ancestors said white men speak with forked tongue. And, you know, one of the things is reptiles are the only animals that have a forked tongue. And they whip that tongue out, and they actually taste the air, and they bring it back in, and they're able to see if there's an animal close up. They can tell if a rabbit is close by or a small mouse or a rabbit by tasting the air. So speaking with a forked tongue, and we know Satan does the same thing. In fact, if we look in John 8:44, this is what God says about Satan. He says, "You are of your father, the devil, and the lust of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own. He is a liar and the father of it." So we can see why we talk about speaking in a forked tongue. I think we probably say that a lot of our politicians do the same thing. So the only way we'll ever know God's truth on any spiritual issue is to stick to the biblical message. Don't rely on your natural understanding. Why? Because God's ways and thoughts are not like ours, Isaiah 55:8-9. So hence, to know his ways and thoughts, you must go by scripture alone, or you will be deceived. So Satan is a liar, okay? He's got the forked tongue. And one of the verses that really are in 2 Corinthians 4:3-6, I want to read, because this also says the same thing. "And even if your gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. For what we proclaim in ourselves, but Jesus Christ as our Lord, and ourselves as servants of Jesus for our sake and for God's sake. For God, who said, 'Let the light shine in the darkness.'" Now, one of the things that I want to talk about is the first curse. We're going to go back to, remember, we have to go back to the law of first reference. We went back to the garden. And if you look at the garden incident, we find out that reflectively, the first curse of God was on Satan. The ancient serpent, who we see in Revelation 22, the Bible teaches us that the things that go on their belly is an abomination. Remember, he was cursed to be on his belly. That's an abomination to God in Leviticus 11:42. God told man he was the dust, and to dust he shall return. The Bible also teaches that Satan is like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour or eat. So that's in 1 Peter 5:8. So reflectively, to eat the dust of the rest of life implies that Satan will continue to seek to devour mankind till his appointed time. To crawl on his belly is a sign of disgust, abomination. To eat dust is a sign of despondency. We see that in Micah 7:7, that says, "Thou shalt lick the dust like a serpent. Thou shalt move out of their holes like worms of the earth, and they shall be afraid of the Lord our God, and shall fear because of thee." So we see this whole concept of the first judgment was against Satan, and his judgment was that he'd be crawling on his belly. Now, one of the frequent questions that people ask, it's kind of interesting, is, did Satan then at one time have legs? And I think the answer is definitely yes. And this is why, because of Genesis 3:14. And let me read it to you. "So the Lord God said to the serpent, 'Because you have done this, cursed are you above all livestock.'" Now, we all know livestock all have four legs. So he's cursed them. So I think probably Satan was somewhat like, we see here, he was described as being like livestock. So he probably was a grazer, had four legs. Obviously, he could talk. You know, I'm thinking about talking. There's only two times I ever noticed that the Bible mentions an animal talking. Once was Satan himself in the garden, and the other was Balaam's donkey that talked to him about why he was striking him when the angel of the Lord was right in front of him. And one of the strangest questions I ever was asked was at the Good Samaritan Ministries. One of the men raised his hand and said, "Is it true that when you throw a snake into fire, it grows legs?" Well, I knew a little bit about snakes, and I knew something that, because I studied biology in college, that snakes actually have what's called a hemipenis. It looks like sort of two fingers that come out. You take your finger and make the V sign, it's about that long. And one of the things happens is when they're mating, they send these two fingers out. It does look like legs. Well, if you think about a snake being thrown into the fire and being stressed, it may very well, in its dying throes, send out its hemipenis, which may look like it's actually grown legs. But, of course, we know that this is not true. It's not legs at all. It's actually his hemipenis. In fact, we know from a fact that when people are hung, they actually die with an erection. And this is a reaction. The body weight comes down. It fills up all the tissue pieces, and it, you know, looks like he has an erection. So it's not unusual that this would happen. Now, in our ancient mythology, we see a lot of examples of snakes. Okay, one of the ones we see is in various movies. We see, for example, in The Clash of the Titans, we see Medusa as being taken over by Perseus. And Perseus kills her by cutting off her head. And he's able to look at her, not directly, because she can turn you into stone. He looks through his shiny shield, sees her, and then cuts off her head. In fact, there's even a commercial on television now. You see Medusa, you see her walking into a party, or actually crawling. She's on her slithering body, and she has, of course, hair of all these serpents. And she's advertising buying sunglasses off of Amazon. And it's kind of interesting because she walks in and she sees Perseus there. And what she does in the commercial is takes off her glasses, and her stare causes Perseus to change into stone. So we can see that this whole concept of Medusa snakes, we even see it in our commercials. And one of the reasons why there's so much association in our culture with snakes is because, and why are they associated with medicine? And that's one of the things is the shake, several times during their lifetimes, a snake sheds its skin and emerges with a youthful appearance. So it appears sometimes because of the shedding of their skin that they never die. And this is where one of the things that man picked up and started to worship, because of they're always shining. And actually, snakes will live as long as their lifespan, and they continue to grow during the whole time, as I mentioned before. So the other myths, we have Apollo killed the python, and this was at the oracle that used to be the oracle of the python and now became the oracle of Delphi, that was initiated by Apollo killing the python. And the story of Hercules, a baby, takes two poisonous snakes, one in each hand, and kills them. And in the movie Jason and the Argonauts, which has been very popular with kids, Jason the Argonauts, he kills the Hydra, okay, which is a serpent-like creature with many heads. So one of the things that I want to relate to is something about one of the commentaries that I read, which is really excellent. It says, life is so full of temptations, leading us away from the Father, forgetting the love of the Son, so easily to be led astray, to follow the will of the world, to succumb to the many faces or the tentacles of Satan, the tempter, leading us to darkness, the false gratifications, the things of the earth, a fleeting and failing, not lasting like the everlasting love of God. You know, we have to remember we're wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and against powers, against the world's rulers of darkness of this age, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in heavenly places. And one of the things I remember, I love to do, and when I taught biology in high school, one of the things we did was learn to use the microscope. And we would have little vials that we'd have full of paramecium. And one of the greatest ones we had we looked at the Hydra. It's a small little creature. We looked at it through our microscope, and it had tentacles. And we have to be very careful about the tentacles of Satan, because they permeate into every phase of our life. In fact, in 2 Timothy 2:22, it says, flee from the evil desires of youth. Flee from the evil desires of youth. We have to flee from them. Okay, why? These tentacles reach everywhere. And we know when you touch one of the tentacles, there's a little trigger, and boom, the spine comes out, the barb is shot in, and you feel pain. One of the worst things I ever had was from a Portuguese man of war. They appear a lot of times when I'm at Jensen Beach. I see them having a purple flag flying, and I asked them, what's that for? And they said, well, there's Portuguese man of war in the area, and they can have strands of tentacles to go as much as 100 feet, so we have to be very careful about that. Now, some of the other things that we see that men worshipped back in these ancient times, and what God is bringing together when he's talking about the serpent and also the staff of Moses being turned into a serpent. We look at this Greek goddess Lamia, and Lamia was basically a woman who had a snake's body. And one of the things about her, this Greek goddess would eat children. Okay, now I can't help but think about eating children in Lamia and exactly what's happening in the world today with abortion. And one of the things that I saw not that long ago driving down 95 was a big sign. It was a picture of Jesus, and he had his head down and his hand on his forehead, and he was holding a fetus in his hands. So we see Lamia, that was a goddess that they worshipped, and it was the goddess of one who would eat children. So another one, Tiresias. And Tiresias is another creature, and this creature was walking along one day, and he saw two snakes mating, and he was turned into a woman. I can't help but think about this whole concept we have today of the gender war that we're having with teaching kids that they can change their gender. And this is right out of the same things that was worshipped back in the mythology of the ancient times. And then we have this figure Lilith. Lilith is a female figure in Mesopotamia and Judean mythology, and they said she was actually Adam's first wife. And actually, Lilith is cited as having been banished from the Garden of Eden for not complying with obeying Adam. So in summary, snakes and snake symbols are intimately connected with biblical topics like the Asherah, Adam and Eve, the Tree of Life, healing, the rod of Moses, and Aaron, the Levites, Lilith, and human sacrifice. The same figure, Lilith, that embodied racist sexuality and was also an agent in death, she was actually said to have strangled children. So we see again these movements, in fact, the feminist movement in America, as well as the Me Too movement, actually many times refer back to Lilith, the woman's rights movement. Okay, and I'm looking at women here in the slide that I'm looking at. The world belongs to women. Okay, and this whole concept of the Me Too movement. So we see that as basically a representation of this mythology concerning Lilith. So when Moses was in Egypt, snake imagery was absolutely everywhere. There were 37 different snakes that they were worshiping. Even they had ancient Egyptian board games, which were arranged in a snake pattern. So let's get down to the first time that Moses comes in contact with, beginning with the book of Exodus, Moses' staff becomes a snake. And I'm going to read from Exodus 7:8. Then the Lord told Moses and Aaron, when Pharaoh says to you, perform a miraculous sign, then you will say to Aaron, take your staff and throw it in front of Pharaoh. It will become a serpent. So Moses and Aaron went in to Pharaoh and did what the Lord had commanded them. Aaron threw his staff in front of Pharaoh, his officials, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh called also his wise men, his sorcerers, and they, along with Egyptian magicians, did the same thing with their secret arts. So each of them threw down his staff, and it became a serpent. But Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. Yet Pharaoh's heart was stubborn, and he did not listen to them, just as the Lord said would happen. So we see what God was working through, this whole concept. He see that the majority of people in the world then worshiped snakes. And today, even, I said, 65% of the religions of the world worship snakes today. And, you know, Aaron's rod and the rod of Moses, it wasn't just used for turning into a snake. Remember, he held it up and he split the Red Sea. And also, he struck a rock and got fresh water from it. And one of the things you notice is we're going to be talking about the judgment of the snake was not just about the snake worshipers, but it was Pharaoh himself. Because if you look at Pharaoh, one of the things he had on his head was the Uranus. Uranus is a cobra. And then next to it was also a vulture. And then when you see basically the spread that comes out from behind his head that you can see on the Sphinx, that area that looks like a hood, that's a hooded cobra. In fact, even if you take a look, and in fact, I was thinking about the movie The Predator, and in The Predator, he rips out a human skull, and attached to it is the vertebral column, the spine. And if you look at the spine and the head together, it looks like, you know, a serpent with a head. So we see these things occurring, and one of the things I constantly think about, in fact, one of the few movies that I have that that I saved was The Ten Commandments, and I never forget that scene where Pharaoh is there and Moses comes and the snake turns his staff into a snake and then magicians do theirs. But then what happens? Okay, the serpents are swallowed up by Moses' serpent. And I couldn't help but think there are snakes that eat other snakes. In fact, at the nature center that I had one of my offices in at Oregon Ridge Nature Center, in our classroom, we had a king snake. And a king snake is also known as a chain snake, and it was really docile. It was, about 4.5 feet long. It had markings on it, like a chain, like a white chain, so that's why they called it a chain snake. But it was called a king snake because it would eat other snakes. And I never forget, I used this snake all the time. I would actually play games with kids. I would say, you know, the Native Americans had a game. They had a bag, and they had an animal in it, and the other Indians would put their hands in without looking and feel around and see if they could identify it. Well, I would have a snake, the king snake, in there, and I knew it would never bite anybody. It never bothered anybody, and it was really big, and when they pulled it out, wow, it caused a lot of amazement. But one of the things they told me, why don't you go feed the king snake? And when I threw a little garter snake in there, I couldn't believe the change. This chain snake, got completely aggressive, immediately went after, killed, and then swallowed that garter snake. So one of the other things so Pharaoh's sitting there, he's got this headdress on with what looks like this spreading head of a cobra, and also he's got a cobra on the top of his head. He also has a nekbet, and a nekbet is a vulture. Now, this was a goddess in Egypt mythology, and it basically was representative of the power over death. So you see Pharaoh, he's got these two different structures on his basically his headdress. He's got a cobra, and which is the Uranus, and he's got a nekbet. Now, one of the things I want to fast forward to, when you get into, we're going to get in detail into, we've already been handling a lot about the snake, but when we're talking about the vulture, I just want to recite to you the verses in Revelation 19, 17, and 18, and these are what actually happens to these vultures in the end, in the book of Revelation. Then I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried out with a loud voice, saying to all the birds that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather together for the supper of the great God, that you may eat the flesh of kings, the flesh of captains, the flesh of mighty men, the flesh of horses and those that sit on them, and the flesh of people, free and slave, both small and great. So we see here we have him proudly wearing the cobra and proudly wearing the vulture, and we see what happens to the kings in the end. They're going to all be eaten by the vulture himself. So one of the things that we see in terms of the Egyptian worship of snakes is we see that they had this image called the Wadjet. The Wadjet was a cobra goddess of Lower Egypt. She was often depicted as a cobra twined around a papyrus stem. The Wadjet was nurse to the infant god Horus. The Wadjet and the Nekbet were the protective goddesses of the king and were sometimes represented together as the king's diadem. So we see that this Wadjet and all these things were basically there. In fact, if you look at the recently discovered Hormeb mummy, it was encased in a mask, and the mask had on it the Uranus, the cobra with its neck spread. So we see this whole neck spreading as an image. So God is not just judging the snake worshipers, but also judging Pharaoh, because Pharaoh represented the snake through his headdress and through the spreading of the cobra's band that he has when he gets angry. So we see all this in terms of the way the Lord is working. And, you know, I have to mention that there's things that I've seen that really remind me a lot of this, of Satan himself. And I was thinking about, you know, there is something called the flying dragon. It's actually a lizard that spreads out these look like wings, and it glides in the air. We actually know that there are snakes that actually flatten out their stomachs and glide. They'll jump from a tree, leap from a tree, and then glide along and go for some distance. And there was a movie, Avatar. And in the movie Avatar, there was the Turok. And you know, the hero gets the actually one under his control and rides him. And the Turok is known as the last shadow because it's the last thing you see before you're killed. And, of course, we see in Jurassic Park, we see the Pleistosaur as a representation of an ancient creature that lived who had wings. So we see this whole concept of the Wadjet, which is a serpent with wings. In fact, also it had a scepter. And the scepter was a symbol of power. And the Waz scepter was something that the Wajet always held. So we have this woman who has changed into a form of a snake with wings, with this power of the Wajet, and also with the power over man and living. And even in there's a movie with called Conan the Barbarian, and he attacks what was called the serpent worshippers, the snake worshippers at the time. And there's a scene in there where he tangles with a monstrous snake and kills it. And one of the things that you notice that there are snake worshippers today, and I mentioned before about 60% of the world is snake worshippers. We have the Nag Pachata, which is a festival that's held in India. They're snake worshippers, and they do some strange things. They actually bring milk, and they feed the milk to the snake. So Nagas, the snake worshippers, they were actually the Nagad and snake worshippers in 26 different countries. And they have all these symbols and these statues that they make with twining serpents around human beings, etc. So one of the things that ancient Mesopotamians and Semites believed that snakes were immortal because they could infinitely shed their skin and grow forever. And this whole thing came about into the snake worshippers as this concept of reincarnation. They watched the snakes be able to shed and grow what more beautiful and look younger and so forth. And so they basically translated this into the concept of snake worshippers. And we see this actually right in the beginning of in the beginning of Christianity, when we see Abraham. And Abraham, remember, he was in the Ur of the Chaldees. And if you remember, Ur of the Chaldees had a big worship tower, and it was basically to the moon god. The moon god, again, we're getting into that crescent moon and the concept of the moon and the shining star. And one of the things you notice, that, you know, we see the cross. When we see the cross that Jesus died on, remember what happened with the Nushatan, which was a brazen serpent that that Moses raised up? Remember, the Lord was angry with the Israelites, and he sent serpents to bite and kill them. And what he did was he made this brass serpent, he held it up, and all they had to do was look at it, and it saved them from death. So, and one of the things about it is the Nushatan was actually worshipped for 800 years. It wasn't until the time of Hezekiah that basically it was destroyed. And he knocked down a lot of the Ashtaroth and cut down those gods, and he also destroyed the Nushatan. And archaeologists have found throughout the entire Middle East and out through the entire area of the Middle East was basically copper snake idols. They found them everywhere. These were common worship tools. So we see, even in our symbols today, the symbol for the health of people, you see this carduceus, which is serpent wrapped around a pole, or the mercury, okay, which is another symbol, which is the caduceus, which actually has the same kind of concept. We see that. In fact, it was kind of interesting because one of the things that I ran into, I was the first thing I ever had published. I was a member of the National Astronomy of the Pacific, and they had Mercury magazine. I remember reading in there, and they were anti-Christians, and I wrote an article back to them, and I basically talked about snakes and told them that one of the things about Mercury is he was a great deceiver, and when he was holding up that snake in his hand, remember what we talked about, Satan being the great accuser, the great deceiver. So even today, we have a worship in China, and we have what's called the Year of the Snake. I'll talk about that next time.
As you canoe through the river of life, may all your rapids be little ones. If you capsize, God can right you again. If you're drowning, God can throw you a line and a life raft. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen. If you have questions or concerns or like to know more, you can contact me, LUVH2O, the O is a letter, 62, at comcast.net.
Lord, you seem so far away, a million miles or more, it feels today.